How's that for an intro? Pretty good? Did you like that, Admiral?
You betcha. It'll get you waking up.
Thanks to the Monolith Orchestra. They're on eBay. The gentleman who's behind that worked very hard on that. We kind of traded ideas, and he came up with some great pieces of music for the program. I'm hard to please, and I think most of you are the same way. Now, that said, Monolith Orchestra, I want to just repeat something. And don't blush, Harry. But all of us on this planet who have an open mind and who seek reality, I don't even like to use the word truth much anymore because it's been so perverted. But if we seek reality, we're going to come up with a truth. We owe Harry Cooper a debt of gratitude that is really almost immeasurable. He has filled in so many blanks, and his information is so peerless that it is a national treasure. He is, and his work is. And I just wish I could lock him up in a room and have him crank out volume 6, 7, 8, 30, however many it takes. He has so much information that he is more than willing and happy to share with the world. He doesn't charge people $700 to have dinner with them. He's a great man, and I think you all know that. And it's always a pleasure to do these programs because I learn. Every time I learn things, and I really enjoy that very much. So thank you, sir. That's well, formal that's, from the world. That's everybody.
That's very, very humbling. That all in. Thank you very much.
No. I'm reflecting the wishes of a lot of people to thank you. So,
thank you. I love what I'm doing.
I know you do. Me too. 30 years doing this.
Yep. And it's 40 years I've been doing Shark Hunters.
So we got 70 years between us doing what we like to do.
And, yeah, I walked off a job as vice president of a company making a lot of money to do this at no salary. I was making between $4,000 and $5,000 a week 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
that's
first
like
off...
That's about $1 million a year.
Yeah. I was not married yet, so I lived big. I had fancy car, lots of girlfriends, spent a lot of money. Not like Hunter. I never did any drugs. Never did any hookers, but... This has to be done. And I met all these great U-boat guys, and they opened their doors. They gave me their memories, and if I needed to talk to another one, they'd call him up and tell him, hey, we're sending Cooper over here. Wow. Tell him what he needs. And when I was a kid in high school, I read about Otto Kretschmer, the top submarine commander of the whole war. Later, I met him. I became friends with him and his wife. They gave me a sleeping room in their house, and Otto said I was part of the family. Holy cow.
Yeah.
If that ain't awesome.
It's indescribable. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And other guys like Eric Topp, been in and out of his house umpty zillion times, Reinhard Hardegen, and Hess, the youngest combat submarine commander of the war. 4 months past his 21st birthday, they gave him a combat submarine, and he became my best friend in Germany. Wonderful people, decent people.
When you were a boy and the war was going on and you were becoming familiar with the other side, which wasn't easy to do because the media does what the media does. It hides, it lies, it distorts, it corrupts. Did you know intuitively that we were, like General Patton said, we fought the wrong enemy? Did you ever have that feeling like there's something more to this than the media was letting on and we were making a big mistake? Did you figure that out?
No, I didn't, because first off, I was just a little kid. I was 6 years old when the war ended. Later on, I had always believed what we read, were taught in school. Germans were all Nazis and all horrible people. And then I went into the Air Force, and it was the Cold War, and we hated the Russians, had to kill all the Russians. Mm-hmm. And it was only after I got going with Shark Hunters and met all these veterans from Germany that I realized that, Jesus, they're the same as we were. They went to the same churches we went to. They were not the bloodthirsty people we were told. And the same with the Russians. 1991, I was there the first time, and I finally found out why. I was invited over by the commander-in-chief of the Soviet Navy, Vladimir Chernyavin. He was ordered by Gorbachev to invite me, but I didn't know until about a year, 2 years ago, our friend, the current spy that we both know, he told me it was because Reagan had become friends with Gorbachev, and Reagan told Gorbachev to invite me over. This was at the beginning of Glasnost. And Ronald Reagan was a member of Shark Hunters, so that's how it happened. I was sitting at a round table. I was standing. They were all sitting, a bunch of admirals. And Anatoly was my translator, and he was, I found out later, was chief of intelligence for the Soviet Navy. And each one of these admirals asked me a question about submarine history, and I'd answer it. And all this time, this one admiral right across the table from me was just staring at me with fire in his ice blue eyes, and it came time for him to ask a question, and he said, "Why are you here?" So I pointed at him, and I said, "I was told you're my enemy." He got very stiff, and I said, "But you were told that I was the enemy." "Oh, yeah," he grudgingly admitted. And I said, "But I don't see an enemy. I see a man like myself who wants his family to grow up in peace and prosperity." And he agreed. I said, "So let's drink with Pepsi, a great American invention." He said, "No, we drink with vodka, a great Russian invention." I said, "Okay, fine. See, we're together already." And with that, like somebody threw a switch, they were all on their feet, ripping medals off their uniforms, pinning them onto my jacket. And they ain't no different than anybody else. They just want their families to grow up in peace. And it's the people at the top who start the wars.
Right.
For whatever reason, we could go into that for a long time.
Right. I feel so sorry for the Ukrainian people, sold out, being liquidated by an international Bolshevik Zionist dictatorship that was installed to run that country. They weren't elected. And they're killing
you mean Zelensky?
I won't even say his name. He has overseen and presided upon the liquidation, the deaths of maybe up to 400,000 Ukrainian Christian men and some women in there as well.
And he is packing money away something fierce. He's a multi-billionaire.
That's what they do.
So I'm told.
That's what they do. Anyhow, it makes me sick. The Ukrainian people are wonderful people. People are people. And you get them out of this
political
crap.
And we've been there twice. I've had the history groups there twice into Ukraine, to the Crimean Peninsula. We were in the valley of the shadow of death, you know, cannon to the left of them, cannon into the valley of death, road to 600. We were there. We were at Sevastopol, where the, or they pronounce it Sevastopol, where the battles were going on in the Crimean War. Right. And we went on board one of them, the Russian submarines. And they just treated us like family.
I understand.
So, yeah.
All right, let's go back to our pictures here. We have a wonderful picture show for you. Picture number five is you're looking at a man who literally, if he were had his head screwed on right, he could make a major contribution to the work of Harry and Shark Hunters and the world in helping to spread the truth, the reality about what happened.
Such
and
a coward. He, on his birthday, I think he was about 20, 21, 22, on the 4th of January, 1962, his birthday, he was growing up on a plantation in Bolivia. His mom fled Berlin when the Reich collapsed. She was very close friends with Eva Braun and also with Magda Goebbels. Holdeen was the
by
kid.
Extension, but The daughter, the mom, yeah.
And she, of course, Eva Braun and Magda Goebbels couldn't be friends because Hitler was banging Magda Goebbels.
A little bit
and
of
Holdeen
conflict.
Was his child. So he was there. He saw Hitler arrived at the plantation where he was living in Bolivia on the 4th of January, 1962. And everybody had to line up along the driveway, and he said he had to give the Hitler Gruß, you know, the right arm in the air, which is really the Roman salute. And 1 month later, Hitler died. February of, I'm looking at my notes, I can't even read my own damn notes, but February of 62, Hitler died on a plantation nearby in Bolivia. And this guy has all that information. And I had met him a couple times out in our West. And one day he let our friends know out there that he was ready to tell me everything. Okay, fine, I get on an airplane, I fly out there, drive hours across New Mexico. It's a beautiful state.
I remember when that happened. I think I urged you to follow through on your instincts, get on the plane and go.
Yeah. Yep. So we got there, and my friends who were, they own a resort area.
I was elated that he was going to
do that. Yeah, so was I. The two of us, or the two of them, plus me, plus this guy, goes by the name of Michael. We get the car, we drive up this mountain to this beautiful restaurant, and we're having a great meal, and then we say, okay, Michael, start telling me everything. Oh, well, they might throw me out of the country. I said, oh, come on. You said that. And the lady, she also turned on and said, Michael, you told her you were going to say everything. Well, but I'm afraid they would throw me out. So I told him what I thought of him, and for some reason that other couple that I knew, they won't talk to me anymore. C'est la vie. But I'm a fanatic for honor. You know, if you say you're going to do something, you damn well better do it.
Right.
And if you don't want to do it, don't say it.
You got it. Very simple code of ethics. It's not a big mystery.
Yeah.
You're either a man of your word or a woman of your word, or you've got no honor.
Yeah, that's why I love dealing with these Germans over there. A handshake is a contract.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right, Fritz Wiedemann.
Fritz Wiedemann. He was the guy who was the manager of the plantation where Michael was living. And Hitler came that day to see Wiedemann, 4th of January, 1962. He came there to see Fritz Wiedemann, who was his commanding officer in World War I. And later, as Hitler was climbing through the political ranks, Fritz Wiedemann was his adjutant.
Wow.
And so Hitler was there to see him, spent some hours with him, I assume, picking up some papers or I don't know. He was doing something there.
A month before
he died. And then he got back in his car. Say again?
About a month before he died?
Yes, exactly. He died, let me grab my note here, 13th of February, 1962. Hitler did. I don't know when Wiedemann did.
Long way from putting a bullet in his brain in the bunker, huh?
Yeah. Especially history says he shot himself in the right temple, but the picture you see of dead Hitler has a bullet hole right in the middle of his forehead. That ain't the right temple.
Here's another one for you, real quick. Forgive me for changing course here, but this is John F. Kennedy.
Oh,
yes. They finally released the autopsy pictures. You can find them there online.
Oh, really?
And he's laying on the table, and his head is up on something. He's kind of holding his head up as a cushion or something behind it. I don't know, an autopsy, whatever, a head cradle. It's not John Kennedy. That is not JFK. If you look simply at the right fore portion of his forehead wrapping around toward his ear, the skin and the entire structure of his head is perfect. There's no bullet hole in it. That bullet hit him in the front on the right side. Everybody knows that. You got to look at the pictures. That is Officer J.D. Tippit, who looked so much like JFK. His fate was sealed. He was murdered on the day, and they used J.D. Tippit as Kennedy's body.
And you mean the government lied to us? I'm shocked.
They put a bullet in the back of J.D. Tippit's head, and the autopsy photos show a round bullet hole in the back of the crown of his head. But the right side of his face, above his eye, wrapping up over the top of his head, is perfect. If you look closely at pictures of Kennedy and Tippit, the ears are different. The nose is slightly different. It's not JFK.
Wow. I didn't know that. The ears tell everything. You look at somebody's ears and look at another picture of them, the ears have to be the same. That is one of the big identifiers.
There's a nice profile of Kennedy. It matches up with the autopsy picture. Just look at it. There's no damage to the head where that explosion happened when the bullet hit him on the right side of the temple. Boom.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. It's just normal. And they claim that he was shot in the back, the book depository lie, and there's a bullet hole in the back of Tippit's head.
Yeah, the book depository. Poor old Lee Harvey Oswald allegedly shot Kennedy in the back.
Yeah.
Three bullets within 1.5 seconds. Then they've changed the narrative later on. It was 8.5 seconds. Doesn't matter. That Magna Cortona rifle, you'd be better off smacking him over the head with the rifle butt than trying to shoot him, because that thing was notoriously inaccurate.
Lousy rifle. Mannlicher Carcano, terrible rifle. Look, it's all lies. Everybody knows it's lies.
It was made for Italian surrender ceremonies.
Yeah. J.D. Tippit was called, in the Dallas police force, JFK. That was his nickname, because the resemblance was uncanny.
Wow. Well, you've dug into that a whole lot more than I have. He didn't have anything to do with Hitler and the Third Reich, so I didn't get into it. He got kicked out of Washington, D.C. He was in Naval Intelligence, a young lieutenant, and he got kicked out of there because he was banging Hitler's girlfriend, Inga Arvad. And so J. Edgar Hoover wanted to kick him out of the Navy altogether. Papa Joe didn't want that, but Papa Joe didn't want him hanging around with this four-year older broad who was divorced once or twice, non-Catholic. So that's how John F. Kennedy got sent to the South Pacific.
They didn't expect him to come
back. After the war, they tried to rekindle fire, the flames, but it wasn't there. And she wound up marrying, I think it was Cowboy Tim Holt, one of our 1940s cowboy heroes.
Big Hollywood star, that's right.
Yep. As a matter of fact, I'm seeing reruns every Saturday with Ken Maynard and Tim Holt.
Oh, yeah. I remember that on TV.
Yep.
John Kennedy, 28, in 1945, I believe, said, this is a direct quote from his diary, "Hitler will emerge from the hatred that surrounds him to become one of the most significant figures who ever lived. He had in him the stuff of which legends are made." John Kennedy, 1945.
Wow. But you're not supposed to know that.
No. You're not supposed to know that
Hitler was the Time Magazine Man of the Year in 1938. You're not supposed to know that.
Nor that General George Patton, our greatest general, said, "We fought the wrong enemy. We've been conned.
Yeah. That he wanted to rearm the Waffen-SS and march east. And
he kept three divisions intact, and he was ready to go.
Yeah. That was bad enough,
permission.
But he kept asking what happened to the $3 billion worth of gold that disappeared out of the Reich Bank when the Allies came in and
that's true.
It went to some American banks, and I think that was the biggest reason he got clipped.
Go online
a simple car accident, wasn't it, right?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, right. go online and look up Patton's letters to his wife. They used to be on. Maybe they've been scrubbed, but they used to be there, and they're quite interesting, to say it mildly. All right, let's get back to Fritz Wiedemann, Hitler's commanding officer in World War I. where mm-hmm. Hitler served with great bravery and distinction.
Yeah, he was decorated with the Iron Cross.
You got it. So hey, it's hard to believe that a country the size of Montana or Texas took on the whole world and tried to reverse the direction the world was being taken by the international banking cartels.
He kept trying to make peace with England, but Churchill kept blocking it.
One of the biggest pigs in human history. That's me talking, not for Harry. Mm-hmm. All right, Paradise Lost, picture number 7. That's the Analco House.
Let's skip ahead because the clock is ticking. If that's okay with you, we'll...
Sure.
let's run up to number 10.
Oh, we can't leave number 9. Come on, look at number 9.
A gorgeous flower woman.
A flower if there ever was one. All right.
Yeah, beautiful woman. And we got a lot of photos from... We've got a couple of videos of her.
It almost looks like Ava Brown.
That's because it is Ava Brown.
That's a joke.
Okay.
So look at that. Look at that. See that? The whole idea that Germany was some heathen agglomeration of monsters. Germany celebrated life, beauty, nature.
Yeah.
The first country in the world to declare war on cancer, promote vegetarianism, etc., etc.
And also, Hitler was the first world leader, to my knowledge, that banned vivisection.
Sure
did. Most people don't know that. Most people don't even know what vivisection is. That's cutting open an animal without anesthesia to see how the parts are working while the animal is alive and in great pain. Hitler outlawed that.
Also declared war on smoking as a national issue. Built the first freeway system, the first car for all the people that was affordable, a Volkswagen.
Yeah. We've got a copy of the picture that he drew on a napkin for Dr. Portia.
Right. All right, number 10.
Let's look at 10,
I just wanted to pay tribute to that picture of Ava. That's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, Ava Brown was a beautiful lady. Number 10, we have bunches of these things. These are celebrations, usually on the 20th of April, Hitler's birthday. They were going on all the way up at least until 1995 when Sam Donaldson, the disgraced news guy, came down to Barry Loci and created a lot of problem. The guy who is circled, that's, what the hell's his name? He was a mountaineer. Okay, I got to wait till the tape comes around in my head again. But you see, the arrow is pointing at the picture of Hitler. That was the birthday.
Right.
Otto Mehling, that's the guy in the circle. He set up the spy ring down there around Lake Nahuapi.
He came over the mountain, right? Isn't he the one?
Well, no. Canaris came over the mountains by horseback. This guy lived there. He built his own home way up on a cliff, and he carried all the boards and material up on his back, climbing the base of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Tough guy.
Yeah. Well. Now, Canaris has a checkered history.
An interesting history, yeah.
We got to keep moving here.
Okay, keep going. Number 11. We know who those people are. Hitler was scared to death. He's going to wind up like Mussolini, hung up in the town square.
Mm-hmm.
And most people think that they were hung up and then machine gunned. No, they were killed elsewhere a couple of days before and then hung up here. And right in the middle is Clara Petacci, Mussolini's mistress, and somebody had the decency to pin her skirt together so it wouldn't fall open. But Hitler was afraid he was going to wind up like Mussolini. Let's look for number 12. This is at Inalco. Most people don't even know it's there. I mean, you got to chop through the brush to find. And there are 6 of these things there. I don't know what they're... I think they had some kind of little religious icon in there. I don't know. There are 6 of them. One was destroyed when a tree fell on it. But who knew these were here? Not those clowns from the Hunting Hitler TV series. They would have shown it, but they never got there.
Could they have been... tributes to people who died, who had long histories there, maybe? Just a monument, so to speak.
Could have been with an icon from a person mm-hmm. that had died, or a religious artist. I don't know. An icon?
Right. Okay.
And
next picture.
Torres doesn't okay. have any idea.
No, Torres. All right. We 13. Should someday we're going to tell the story about that.
Whenever you're ready. It's your story, pal. Okay, number 13. This is another thing. Nobody knew this. There's a road there where I'm standing, if you can call it a road. It's a couple of ruts. And mm-hmm. this wall was built during the time Hitler was there. And this is way at the far end of the property. And it had been overgrown when we got there, and the old man with the two steers pulled all sorts of debris out of the way so we could see it. And
so the whole place was it was beautiful. Everything was done right. It was
right.
a paradise.
And I mentioned in my hotmails that was going out that the last attempt on Hitler's life was way after Tom Cruise tried to blow him up in the Wolfschanze.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell too much because it's in the book, but this was well after they had moved here to Argentina, mm-hmm. And there suddenly were six strangers popped up into Bariloche, which was a small town at that time.
Word traveled quickly.
Oh, yes, especially when you had agents, security, all around there. Mm-hmm. These guys spoke excellent German, but they had some pretty sharp guys there in their security. They realized, okay, people come here to go fishing, but these guys didn't go fishing. Other people come here to go skiing in the Andes. They didn't go skiing. They weren't trying to hustle the girls. So what were they doing there? Well, they figured it out. And a member of Shark Hunters, a man who is a very, very famous in history, who, I'm not going to say it, it's in the book with his picture, he was called in to head up the defense, and they brought in some 7.62 millimeter machine guns, which I think 7.62 is 30 caliber, I'm not sure.
Very
lined
close.
Them up, and they got the word, the code word, it's in the book, and they knew they were coming, and they were coming mm-hmm. right up here on their Zodiac or their inflatable boat.
Picture number 14.
And what happened to them? Well, that's
don't
in the
tell
book.
Them. Don't say anything. It's all in
right,
the book.
Right, that's in the book.
All right, now, they spoke German, but with an Israeli accent, we think.
No, they didn't have an Israeli accent.
Come on, laugh it up a little here. All right, anyway.
Anyhow, number 15, I put that in for a reason. So many so-called researchers, authors, mm-hmm. they go to a library and they read a bunch of books by a bunch of other guys who were in libraries and read books by somebody else, and each one came mm-hmm. up with its own conclusion, and mm-hmm. they wrote a book. Well, their book, if you don't have boots on the ground, you're just spitting into the wind. And this is Juan Salinas. He and a guy named Carlos de Napoli wrote several books. He lives in, he's in Buenos Aires. They wrote several books on the Third Reich in Argentina. And I'm holding up, there's two of his books and one of mine. Mm-hmm. And so I go and talk to the people, unlike, like I say, some of these people, I won't mention their names, but, and if you look close on my left forearm, you can still see the gash, the gouge, the blood and everything, because I had just been out at Huaymul Island, the secret nuclear laboratory that the German scientists built 2 years after the war. Mm-hmm. And I fell through the dock. So you go to number 16, and that's it. The Germans had a beautiful dock built, but after they left, 52, nobody maintained the dock, and I was there in 2008. And I kind of fell through the dock and left a lot of me there on the on the torn up wood.
Yeah.
So I'm there forever. They'll never get rid of me.
Your DNA remains.
That was the nuclear.
Look at the big building. That's a 2.5-story building, at least 2 stories. Big building.
Right. Remember, photo number 17. And it's still there. At that time when I was there before, and for several years later, the place was maintained by the Prefettura, which is their version of a Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. And when I went there the first time, 2008, there was a petty officer and an enlisted man met me at the dock, and no visitors, etc. And so through my translator, it says, okay, you're Prefettura, see? And I said, well, me also in America, because I was Coast Guard auxiliary. And so I showed him my credentials. Oh, yeah, fine, come on. So I toured the whole island, which we did a few times after that. But then the Coast Guard of the Prefettura left about 10 or so years ago, and the place had just gone to hell. The weeds overgrowing everything, and the anything that's wood has rotted away. But we can still go there. And, Decker, if you're listening, it might make another good operation, because the retired head of the Argentine Atomic Energy Commission, Dr. Mariscotti, is a good friend of mine. So we can go any place we want that is under his control.
And that's on an island, keep in mind.
Yeah.
It's all on an island. A great resort, hotel, and restaurant.
Sure would. They had the big 9-cylinder MAN diesels in there to run the generators.
Yeah.
They had everything there.
Okay, but number 18. We're going to make
18.
It here.
18. You know that one?
This is phenomenal. Listen to this story. This is amazing.
This is the place where Mengele had been using as not a home base, but a rest area, I guess. And that's, as I said, the Mossad came in there. I forgot the date. I'd have to go through the files. But they came in. Maybe, I guess, they were flush with victory from Eichmann, and they were going to grab Mengele. And didn't work. They wound up getting their throats slashed and their bodies dumped in the jungle, I'm told. The owner was shoving Mengele out the window of his room in his underwear as the Mossad was coming in the front gate. I took these pictures, I think it was in 2016, I think it was, yeah. This was a huge, big resort, but there was nobody there. There was me and the two doctors and a Paraguayan guy that's come along to speak the dialect. And this was a meeting room in there, and that's where I met this old lady. And I asked her about it, and she saw Bormann there, she saw Mengele there, she saw Eichmann there, she saw Hitler there, and they were all meeting with Stroessner, who was the dictator
for a long time.
Paraguay at the time. It's a beautiful place, but it must have cost a fortune to build, and it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Look at the rock work.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
In there. Yeah, and it goes on and on and on. It's not just that.
Oh, yeah, this is only a small part of it. They have several other sections that maybe were built at different times, I don't know. And you go down a stairway to one of them, and you go up a stairway to another one. They're all over the side of the mountain there. Beautiful place.
Yeah. There's another
one. Looking forward to getting back there.
That would be fun.
Yep.
Okay, the next picture is the same place. You can see the stonework on your left. The awnings, and look at, there's a pool, it's a little low on water, but obviously that was designed not for tourism, but for a special group of people to come and hold meetings, that whole thing.
Yeah, it was empty. I mean, we had lunch there. There were the two doctors, me and the Paraguayan guy, and one other couple at another table, and that was it. Now, how the hell do you keep the lights on when you only have a few people? And we weren't even staying there. We just had lunch there.
Wow.
Beautiful place, though.
It's on a road, not the best road, but it's on a road that goes to Asuncion? Where does it go?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
You call anyway, it a road, okay.
Point, yeah, it's awfully bad road, I understand.
I remember, yes, it was 2016 because the roads were so rough. I was in a whole lot of pain because just before, I fell off my roof, landed on my ass, so I dropped about 8 feet, landed on my ass, broke my back, in the hospital 3 days, I don't remember, and 4 days after they let me out, I was on a plane for down here. So the doctors, they probably thought I was a real pain in the butt because I was complaining a lot, they probably get tired of hearing me.
I don't know how you made that trip. I talked to you in the hospital. You don't even remember.
Yeah, I remember.
I did. Oh, you do? Okay. And I was amazed you were going to go ahead and do it. I knew why you would, and I probably would have tried to do the same thing, but you were effed up, as they say. Messed up.
I'm too dumb to know when I'm beat.
Well,
no, let's see. That was 2016, 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I was still a kid then. I was in my late 70s back then.
That was when you had your roof repair business, I remember.
Yeah, right. I was up there on the roof getting ready to repair my own roof. My feet were six feet off the ground. The rest of me was straight up, and the ladder shot out from under me. And the last thing I remember, my left foot was stuck on the roof as I rotated, and I thought, why can't I get my foot off? And about that time, everything went dark.
Well, no. Not good.
Yeah, God wasn't ready for me, so I came back.
They took good care of you in the hospital that time. They didn't try to kill you like they did the next time.
Yeah, yep.
God.
Number 20. And if you see on the door, it says number 28. That was Mengele's room when he had people with him. If you look at 21, you'll see there are several single beds and a double bed in that room. So if he was traveling with bodyguards or whatever, this was the room he got. Otherwise, he was in room 26, which was one bed, and that was it.
Do we think that doesn't look like an original? It looks like a box spring there, but that cover on it is pretty garish. Do we think that these single beds, they look like they're originals with the headboards? They look old.
Could be. They were pretty old, I remember that. But were they the originals? I can't say. If I go back there, I'll take some time to ask the people because there's a lot more I need to know.
Very good. Okay. Number 22.
Double deuce. Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. We won't get into that, but that one chapter, chapter 9, loaded with MK Ultra, way more than we touched on a previous show. The MK Ultra, mind control, the Manchurian Candidate, et cetera, et cetera. And that good-looking guy, that good-looking guy in the next picture, number 23, he figures in there too.
Yeah.
Your listeners know who Anton LaVey was?
Most of them.
The Church of Satan.
But back to picture 22, Kathy O'Brien was a victim, a terrible victim of MK Ultra. Mark Phillips apparently was her handler, if I'm using the terms right, and succeeded in helping her get deprogrammed and saved her.
Right, and then they got married. And that's, as I told you in the last show, we were discussing this, I talked to them on the phone quite some time ago, and I asked them to give me more information, and they said they couldn't for whatever reason. So,
no.
Okay, God bless them. I hope they're living a happy life.
Right. All right. The bell. Number 24. This is one of the most interesting, yet to be resolved, mysteries of the war years in terms of German advanced technology, ultra-advanced technology. This is a phenomenal story, and I don't know how much of the truth we know. I don't know if anybody's going to posthumously release the truth, or maybe their family will. Somebody wrote this story up. I don't know who, but somebody.
Yeah. And this chapter deals more with Zerum 525 than it does with Tiglache itself. There are two, if I understand it correctly, two contra-rotating cylinders inside this bell, ultra-high speed, and so the Zerum 525 is both a lubricant and maybe a facilitator for something else, because according to what we've learned about it, this thing was supposed to bend time. The world expert on this is Igor Wachowski, and I spent a day with him over in Warsaw, and I don't know, maybe his English wasn't as good as I thought it was, or maybe he was afraid I was asking too many questions, because his answers consisted of yes, no, I don't know, and that was it. So, what was it? I'm getting more out of our friend the spy. But
well, there's another term that is used, and that's red mercury.
It's what?
Red mercury, as in mercury.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I've heard it described that way.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was particularly intrinsically involved with Tiglache, but it was another advanced.
Most people don't even know it exists, don't even know the name, and those of us who do don't know very much about it at all. Supposedly, this was what was used in as part of the Philadelphia experiment. Was it? I don't know. You can't get any information.
No. We would guess that either the Soviets or the Americans got some of this tech at the end of the war. This would have been the most prized, perhaps, of all. And
it was a huge prize.
Yeah, everything is too silent about it. Something going on.
According to our friend, the spy, the Russians got this, the bell. Mm-hmm. And the machine that made the Zerum 525 was all bundled up by the Russians on a railroad siding, and the nasty old Americans came and stole it from the Russians. So then, according to our friend the spy, the Russians sent it back, gave it back, whatever, and that was the Kecksburg egg, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And I forget the year, I'd have to look at the book. Something came down from outer space or from the atmosphere, plowed up a bunch of trees in the forest, and it was the bell. And NASA sent two guys up to see it loaded and shipped off. And one of them was our friend Clark McClellan. And we are pretty sure that this thing is in one of the sub-basements at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is where Indiana Jones's Cradle of the Lost Ark was stored. Right. Or, you know, just being facetious, but there's so much super secret stuff there, allegedly.
December 9th, 1965. The Kecksburg UFO incident is a very famous one. There have been one movie at least made out of it.
Oh, okay.
A couple documentaries about it.
And there's a mock-up of the bell there in Kecksburg.
Right. Yeah. Now, I have an actual,
like this bell.
Yes, I have a photograph of the bell on a lowboy flatbed truck.
Right.
It's
kind of facing toward
color
the camera.
That's right. And that is supposed to be a real, and the time is right, the vintage truck is right.
Yeah.
The Army put it on there and got it to hell out of there real quick.
Yep.
Clark went up to it and said he tapped on it to see if anybody would respond. And nothing came back of it. He promised me he would tell me who went with him. Now, this whoever was sent with him was a German. That's all he would say. He wouldn't tell me who. I think it was Kammler.
Well, I don't know. He kept saying the same thing to me. I can't tell you. And I said, what does it matter? The guy's dead. Well, yeah, but he's got family and all that. So. Yeah.
Anyway, I think it was Hans Kammler would be my best guess. That would be one. Hans did not die in Germany.
No, for sure.
Et cetera. Anyway, it's a fascinating story. So if you look at the Kecksburg UFO incident, think of the German Die Glocke, okay? That's what you may well be seeing.
We cover this extensively in our other book, Space, the Final Frontier, which was written by Clark, but he couldn't get anybody to publish it, so I promised I'd publish it, and it's out there. You can get it. Just go to sharkhunters.com and go to shop in the upper menu, and then go to books. And, of course, when you go to sharkhunters.com, you'll come up with the with the liars from the Southern Poverty Law Center who say that I'm a Nazi.
Forget it. They say the same thing about me. Just come on. That's what they do.
When the hell is our meeting? Aren't we supposed to wear armbands or something?
Something like that. April 20th every year we celebrate.
Yeah.
Anyway, Clark was a very enigmatic individual. I knew him for over 20 years. When I sent you the draft of his book, and I'll call it a draft, it had been revised and edited by a very nice woman. I don't want to mention her name. Very nice, who gave it to me. And you got as good a copy as you're going to get. That was literally it. Clark was not an author or a writer, but she did
a lot of work. That's for sure. He never should have been allowed near a computer either.
No.
As you know, I had to go through it four times, word by word by word, because he'd change, in the middle of a paragraph, he'd change the font size. He would change the line spacing. And I had to, goat rodeo. But at any rate, we got it up, and he saw it going into production. He saw it published, and he was happy about that before he died.
Well, he used to sell the book chapter by chapter. When he'd write a chapter, he'd say, I got another chapter done. Can we do another program? Yeah. So he'd come on, he'd say, well, chapter 22 is, or 27 or 38 was whatever there were. I think it was 35.
Right.
But anyway, it's now available. You can get it for $10 or whatever. And it was, but it was just not well written. Harry's done an awful lot of work to bring that up to where it is now.
Yeah,
so it's fascinating.
You go to sharkhunters.com, like I say, go to shop, then go to books, or go to sharkhunters.com, and on the left side of the upper menu, reviews. You can click there and click on the reviews for Space, the Final Frontier. These are video reviews that I did with Dick Allgaier. He's a former professional TV newscaster, and he would conduct
37 years.
Yeah,
yes.
And he would conduct the interviews, and I'd answer the questions, and it's all there. You can learn all about the book.
Nice.
There, all 32 chapters.
Very good. Okay. Any more pictures? We have two more.
25.
Number 25. All right. Twins. So many twins.
Yeah. I'm not going to say any more about that, but read the book. Why are there so many twins in this little village?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And what did Mengele really do in South America?
And he did not die from the stroke and drowning in the Atlantic off the Brazil coast, as history says. One of our members, who's now just passed away, was a Dutch agent, intelligent agent, and he said that his boss had a sit-down interview with Mengele, which he put on tape, 1 year after the alleged death in the ocean.
When he drowned,
and he was going to send me a copy of that tape, but his boss said, are you kidding? And spiked it. But somewhere we've got a video of, I think it's Heinrich Mueller in a cafe down there.
Uh-huh.
South
interview?
America.
Or a conversation?
They were filming him sitting in a restaurant, and he started hollering at somebody, and they were talking back and forth while it was on film.
So who has this interview with Mengele?
Dutch intelligence. And like I said, he was going to have... His boss said that he could send it to me, and then at the last minute, his boss said no.
You know, if you gave them your word, it would never be published in any way. It wouldn't. It's too bad they don't realize that. That needs to be protected by dispersing it to several important people. You would be one.
What can I say?
Yeah.
They're the government, and governments in any country are unusual, let's put it that way.
Yeah,
hard to get along with.
Very well said. Hidden Secrets of World War II, Volume 5, available now at sharkhunters.com/books. Sharkhunters.com. And you want to get a copy of this one. You can want to get the whole set, of course. Each one is special. Are you able to autograph any of these for people?
Well, okay, we have restructured that. Used to be all the books were autographed. Now,
yes.
But then we switched over to none of the books were autographed, and now we offer that option, and here's why. To get them autographed, they have to come from the printer to us.
You,
we have to pay for the shipping from the printer to us,
and
I autograph it, and then we send it to the member, the customer. They pay for the shipping from me to them. But from the printer to us, that's out of our own pocket. We were just barely breaking even on each book. Now, if somebody wants an autographed copy, I'm happy to do it, but it's not $25 anymore. It's $50 for the book plus $9 shipping. That way it comes here. I'm looking at two of them on my desk right now that I'm autographing for one of our members and his father. So that, you know, if somebody wants an autographed one, no problem. It's $50 plus $9 shipping anywhere in the world. And, not autographed $9 anywhere in the world. Autographed $9 only in the U.S. Because otherwise you're dealing with customs forms and all that. Just a goat rodeo.
Wait, the whole book is $9?
No, shipping.
Okay, makes that clear.
The book is $50, and the shipping is $9 anywhere in the U.S., autographed.
Now, that's autographed. If it's not autographed, it's $25 plus $9?
Right, $25 plus $9 anywhere in the world.
Okay, all right, very good. All right, what a dandy program, another great one. Thank you for everything.
It was a lot of fun.
Good. Yeah.
And living it until Norberto woke up.
We got it.
I suspect you're going to light him up tomorrow, but that's your business.
Well, it's not going to do any good. All right. No. Talk to you soon. Keep at it. And, did I tell you about the little bench? Just yes or no?
No, tell me about the bench.
All right, I'll tell you about the bench. Not right now. I'll tell you. There's another little discovery about... Mr. Torres, who do you trust?
I'm not going to get involved with trust issues on his part.
No. All right. Thank you on behalf of everybody, Harry. Thanks for everything. We'll talk soon. You be well.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day. Good night, everybody out there.
Okay. All right. Okay, gang. We'll be right back with Hour 3 in just a few minutes.